Financial technology, or fintech, is one of the fastest growing industries in the world today, with New York, London, Tel Aviv, Edinburgh, Singapore, Moscow, and other major cities all vying for a piece of the action. Welcome to Breaking Banks, the first dedicated radio show that focuses on how this new boom is changing everything from the way we bank to the very concept of money itself. Now, here's your host, Brett King.
You are back with Brett King. This is Breaking Banks. I'm glad to have you guys on the show again this week. We are the number one global fintech show. We have over 6 million listeners in 177 countries. So welcome to Breaking Banks. I'd like to thank Salesforce for being a sponsor of Breaking Banks and Provoke Media. Salesforce is the number one, world's number one customer relationship management CRM platform. Their cloud-based applications for sales, service, marketing, etc. don't require IT expertise to set up or manage. Just log in and go. It's really easy. All right, so I'm going to get to the news in a moment. We're going to welcome back on the show our voice-first specialist, Brian Romley. He's going to be talking to us about some of the latest stuff that's coming out on the voice-first Alexa side. But before we get to that, a quick few conference announcements and some news. You probably saw the news that another $60 million has been stolen from a Japanese crypto exchange, the current digital currency exchange called ZAIF. Z-A-I-F. This is a developing story, but we know that thieves made off with at least $40 million worth of assets made up of around 6,000 bitcoins and some Bitcoin Cash and Mona coin as well there. So that's the hijinks in the crypto space continues. ING has invested in a startup behind multi-banking platform for their corporate arm. So they're investing €7.5 million in Cobase. This is a Dutch fintech startup that looks at the open banking era. Some other news, we have ANZ has followed Chase's lead in Australia and are introducing cardless ATM withdrawals there. So that's big news. The continuing decline of plastic continues. But on the general news front, we see Amazon with a whole bunch of stuff at the moment. We're going to be talking about that in a moment. The conference announcements we have for you, we have September 24th, coming up next week, NiPay, tomorrow's Transactions Unconference. It will be from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. at Rise New York on 43rd Street. You can check that out at nipay.com. On the 27th and 28th of September, also on the 24th through 26th of September, in New York as well, is the Finovate Fall and the Summit Day on the 27th. So I'll be there with JP Nichols, Jim Marus, we'll be on stage for the Summit Day on the 27th. On the 27th and 28th, you have Bank AI, the Future of AI in Banking, American Banker Conference in Austin, Texas. And Sibos, of course, coming up in Sydney on October 22nd to 25th at the International Convention Center. So you can check that out, www.sibos.com. If you have an event you would like us to promote, then get us some news on that. Hit us up on Twitter at BreakingBanks1 or email us at info@provoke.com. So if you've been watching the news, you see, Amazon's had a bunch of hardware announcements over the last week or so. They've introduced a new subwoofer and amp for the Amazon Echo, but they've also introduced a bunch of other appliances that are going to be Amazon Alexa powered. So to discuss this and just give us a general update on the voice first, it's my pleasure to welcome back to the show our good friend, Brian Romley. Brian.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Brett, for having me back. It is a great pleasure. And, you know, it's the extension of the voice-first, device-less revolution that really we have to give credit to Jeff Bezos starting. It is a very planned and organized expansion, in my view. It should be more and more clear at this point. When you see some of the items that were released today, they're really quite fascinating, and I can dive into some of them.
Yeah, tell us about what is on the shopping list.
Well, the shopping list is very, very apropos here. Let's go to the Amazon Basics microwave, right? You gotta kind of at first chuckle at this. You say, why do I need to talk to my microwave? The reality is, do you really need to learn a new user interface to operate a microwave? Because as you go through microwave ovens, if you've purchased one recently, you have to learn a whole new menu structure. You have to try to search, find, do all the different things to try to use the quote-unquote features of the microwave. The same thing took place generations ago with the VCR, right? You had the very complicated VCRs. You had to learn how to program them. Nobody learned how to program them. This is the end point of all technologies, to flatten out the learning curve to zero so that it just works. So the idea is you can go to the microwave and say, one baked potato, you know, and it knows exactly what to do. Is that easier? In my view, it is. And in a lot of expert user interface researchers, this is a future of user interfaces for all appliances. Now, let's go one step further. They have the Dash replenishment service attached to the microwave, which is going to be attached to the refrigerator, the washer, the dryer, any other consumable system. And obviously, Amazon is a merchant, and this is voice commerce. So one could say, in Amazon's example, you know, Alexa, reorder popcorn, you know, that they're at the microwave or maybe something else. So it's really this idea that even the Echo device is being, you know, magically disappearing, and it's becoming almost ubiquitous, ambient throughout the home and now through the car, because they released an Echo device for the car, which will connect you to Whole Foods, which will connect you to other food-to-go systems, gasoline, pharmacies. You can actually kind of see the map of how these things will interplay to the commerce world that Amazon's created. And there was a rumor, or I think it's a confirmed story at this point, that Amazon's going to open up a number of stores that don't require anything but you to walk in and walk out, right? You know, these new stores.
Following on from Amazon Go, which they've already launched in Seattle.
Exactly. But it's going to go one step further. You just talk to your car, you know, your Echo device, which they released today for specifically for your automobile.
Alexa, and you can take me to Amazon Land.
Exactly. So we can see how this is playing out, and why others are, who could compete with Amazon, are sitting on their hands has been a frustration of mine for the last 5 years. I've talked to a lot of these folks who really should know better at this point, and they're befuddled and flustered, flummoxed at this point on what to do next.
Flummoxed.
Yeah, I mean,
why? That's a rather obtuse word.
Yes, it's an obtuse situation, Brett. So we got to get. I got to pull out all the stoppers here. I mean, if you're Google, if you're Apple, if you're anybody else that is even going to remotely be in their realm, the trillion-dollar organizations, if you will, and certainly Walmart is responding, but nowhere near as fast as they could. And banking
business.
I mean, let's face it, this is all going down to banking. It's going down to finance. It's going down. I mean, my background is commerce and payments. That's what drew me into this initially in a big way, and it's going to resurface back. Where if it's an Amazon world, Amazon doesn't want to sell you stuff. They want to be the facilitator. Oh, over 60% of items sold on Amazon's platform is by independent merchants. They've made some independent merchants exceedingly wealthy. And we're going to see that play out in a much more complex way on a local way.
I don't think actually the banks realize that. And the big deal here is obviously commerce, that you're going to be using these voice smart assistants to act as your agent to buy things, book restaurants, book movie tickets, book airline flights, etc. And once you have an AI dealing with commerce in that respect, it's also going to be have to dealing with not only payments, but also access to credit. And so this is a big structural change in the way people decide how to pay and whether or not they will use credit to pay for something.
Exactly, Brett. In fact, I know you brought this up in Augmented and in a lot of your books and writings. You know, it's what happened when the electronic map first really took hold. I mean, the paper map companies, they were like kind of sitting there saying, oh, come on, you're never going to replace us. There's so many maps. It's going to cost so much money. And then we had these rudimentary GPS-based maps. They were okay. And then there was the Google map. Or we can go further earlier than that. But let's just use the Google map as an example. When that finally hit, the shift was so fast and so dramatic that the existing legacy players were literally, they were like the candle makers when Edison light bulbs really came around. It's another analogy. And I really think banking is facing that right now. The card, plastic, like you just mentioned, is disappearing faster than anybody could realize. So as AI proxies and agents, true virtual assistant agents that operate as your proxy, interact with banking, finance, payment proxies, banks think, well, I'll just sit at the bottom of the funnel. Ultimately, it's going to filter to us. No, the very first credit granted was not by a bank. It was really by a merchant. We can even go back to Knights Templar.
Well, even before that, it was, you look at the first loans and they were generally made by merchants to their their customers. Yeah.
So it's coming back full circle, and Amazon, obviously a merchant, they're in the best position to grant credit. Why? Because they already know what consumer behavior is. They already know what you're going to buy. I mean, a vast majority of regular Amazon users, Amazon can predict to about the 80th percentile at this point. Some inside information here, but it's out there. About the 80th percentile. That's why they can get it so quickly. They literally restock the closest facility because they know that you're probably going to order this at some point. You know, and then there's A plus B plus C. If you order A, at some point you're going to order B, at some point you're going to order C. And very few merchants are that sophisticated. So why not grant the credit to order A, B, and C all at once and show it as a package? You know, there's a whole lot that's going to be tied up into this, and it's going to deeply impact the flow of commerce and the flow of money. And not just for Amazon, others will come along with this. I see Apple moving this direction. I mean, the Infinity Apple buying program is in fact sidestepping credit at some point. You never stop paying for your iPhone. You just keep paying for it and you just get updates.
A subscription
basis, sir. Yeah. So in reality, Brett, subscription services and variations of those are sidestepping traditional finance and banking systems. Ultimately, as these companies become commercial banks or, you know, proxies of commercial banks, if you will, more or less. So it is something that is a dramatic shift, and it's happening quite rapidly. And Alexa is a great example of how the front face of AI, the voice, a front end of AI, is really going to bring this revolution about.
Yeah, so for consumer access to AI, you know, if you're going to be using an artificial intelligence, you are likely going to be using voice to access that stack. So I do have a question though about these appliances. You mentioned the microwave, but here's my technical question for you. I have in my living area at home three smart speakers. Two of them are Amazon Echoes and one is a Google Home. And the problem I have right now is that when I ask the Echo, and I'm not going to use the name of it because I've also got one in the studio here. And
I'll hear back you. Up.
But when I use the name to activate that, both of the speakers turn on at the same time and answer me. Now, if I've got four devices in my kitchen that are Alexa powered, how am I going to cope with that? Or how is the voice interface going to know that only one of those devices have to answer me instead of having six devices all spark up at the same time and talk to me?
Brad, that's a wonderful question. And that is, there's patents out there, both Apple, Google, and Amazon have patents related to that. And we're starting to see the beginnings of that. Apple's got it a little bit more finely tuned with multiple Siri devices. Amazon, we're going to start seeing that. I think there was some, you know, they alluded to that a little bit in their announcement today. So basically, it's the AI is going to create sort of a mesh network of these systems. They're going to look at the echolocation, really get really technical, but it's going to see what device are you closer to. Then it's going to look at the situational. Are you really talking to the microwave oven, or are you talking to the refrigerator, or are you talking to whatever? You talking to me? You know. So it's going to come back like that. And
ultimately, is that your best Al Pacino impression?
I know.
Robert De Niro.
I grew up in Jersey. I can't do the New York guy, but I got to get the shaved head. But, you know, the thing is, at the end of the day, it doesn't even matter what device responds to you. Really, what we've come to the point today is that it's really become more diffused and it's almost deviceless. And that's really the future of, I think, computing interfaces, is that the device disappears and the results of what you want, work to be done, if you want to use a terminology, is really all that is that's going to matter. And visually, you're going to see what you need to see. I'm not saying visuals are going away at all. I'm just saying the heavy lifting is going to be done by a proxy, an agent that gets to know you better. And the visuals will appear on the screen that your eyes are looking at that particular point, or even as a hologram. So at some early point, it's going to start just finding one device that's going to respond to you, because they all know that they're there. There's a legion, and they're going to be all around our house. They're going to be in everything. And at some point, you're not even going to care where it is, where the microphone is. You know, it's just going, you're going to be accessing your stuff and getting work to be done, things completed. And it is going to be a hard road for other companies to get into this sort of race, if you will, if they don't realize that that's the future. If your job is to be a manager of a company that's selling devices, and I'm saying to you that devices are going away, you are in a crisis mode right now, if you really understand what that means. Nobody's ready for the big paradigm shifts. Nobody wants to accept it. We're going to hold on to our keyboards with dear life. But at some point, when you look at the youth, they've already given up their keyboards. They're done with it. You know, as they get older, they're going to expect to talk to things and have things to talk back to them. Just as, our parents didn't want to, maybe grandparents didn't want to give up their pens and pencils. Why don't people write anymore or send letters? Why do I have to send it electronically? The same things are going on right now with really very intelligent tech people. And as a futurist, Brett, you know this, as you try to tell people the future, the biggest thing is to overcome their own resistance to having their stability being unstable. Certainly you find this with bankers and people in finance. The hardest thing for me to do is to have people fully understand what digital money is really going to look like and what commerce is really going to look like, because they always imagine that philosophically and politically it's going to be there.
Politics, dude.
Yeah. It gets really political at some point, right?
No,
yeah.
It is. And I think the other aspect of this is, you know, we're designing the entire world right now to digitize commerce, digitize the distribution of every product that can be digitized, and make the value chain, and the delivery of goods and services as efficient as possible, so that essentially you're going to live in this real-time environment, real-time world, where you can choose, a goods or service and be delivered to you within hours, right? From anywhere in the world, eventually. But in that world, then commerce becomes sort of borderless. The physical world is sort of augmenting the digital. It gets very, very interesting.
Yes, and it gets very confusing, because it's happening so quickly that there are generation. It's not a generation; it's like intergenerational, and it's moving so quickly that even people in their 20s and 30s are freaked out over it. You know, and I find it interesting to have to console them that you're not going to be texting the rest of your life. You know, I mean, you could try, but your kids aren't going to want to text to you just like anything else. It's going to shift, and that's happening right now. Like I said, as we cross borders and finance and all that, it opens up the whole idea of what money flows and controls and politics and economies really were, because we're really facing that much more readily in the next 10 years than I think ever before.
So what do you think is, give me sort of a time frame in terms of what you see happening over the next year or two with Alexa, and what you anticipate. You said there was a plan out there.
Yeah, I guess the plan is pretty revealing, and that is everywhere. I mean, we're going to have AI in everything possible when Jeff Bezos is done, and it's going to surround us, and it's going to be ubiquitous, and we're going to have discussions about privacy and all these other things, which we should have had earlier on. I mean, these discussions should have happened 10 years ago, but we just click to agree on everything. But there are going to be microphones and cameras. I mean, they already want into your front door, right? We have an Echo an Amazon system. Yeah. So, I mean, it's going to keep going. So what is going to happen is how much personal data and how much preparation are these proxies and intelligent assistants going to do for us? And whose liability and responsibility is going to be? This is another thing great for bankers to think about. These proxies are going to be executing transactions, trades, money moving back and forth on behalf of the owner. And there are going to be things that are going to be done and can't be undone, especially with some of the blockchain things that I've been seeing, been working on also with voice commerce and blockchain and all that. Because, I mean, blockchain's more of a buzzword. It's just an online database everybody can look at, right, and verifiable. But at the end of the day, this stuff is going to be out there, and it's going to be happening in this next year or so. You're going to not be surprised to see the rate of change accelerate at Amazon, so much so that flummoxed is going to be Google. I mean, Google should be the ones responding to this, but they're not a merchant. They're a tech company, and that in and of itself is a problem. So
this is the driving force here, that you can be you could build an operating system that's voice first.
Sure.
And this is what Google, Apple, and and Amazon have all done. And, you know, to be fair, Samsung and Alibaba and others have as well, right? But what you're saying is the real accelerated demand, where we get to test and prove this tech, is tying around day-to-day commerce, use of goods and services on that voice OS platform. That's sort of the proving ground because it's transactional, right?
Exactly. And that's the elephant in the room that I think as we look back 2020 hindsight, it's commerce, banking, finance, payments, all of that, voice payments, voice commerce, all of it was right there and nobody saw it. And it's Jeff Bezos 101. This is what he's always done. It's his brilliance. Right? It's a one-click shopping cart, right? I remember when that first came out, everybody was saying, that's dangerous, but nobody's going to want it. And Amazon was built on the back of one click.
I don't see people asking Amazon to remove that. Service layer.
And you're not going to see this replenishment system, Dash, the ability to buy stuff into your kitchen, which is the center of the home is the kitchen, right? If you're in a kitchen, you've got that house. And now you're going to get the car. And who cares if everybody else has your pocket? You know, in Amazon's world, ultimately, it's just a matter of time before it gets back into the pocket, which is the put the end point on this. Ultimately, you're going to see Amazon get back in the pocket, and it's not going to be the Fire Phone. It's going to be something entirely different, and people are going to want it in their pocket. And that's the direction. It's a secret way back.
Interesting prediction. Well, so where can we find out more about, Amazon's latest gear that they just launched?
I'm going to probably write something later today about it when things settle down.
Right, so when you do that, let us know. We'll tweet it out to the show listeners.
And it's out there everywhere, but there's a slew of things. An Amazon clock, go and look at that and chuckle. But
Amazon clock? That one I missed. What's Amazon
It's an Amazon clock? Wall clock. A lot of people set timers. And that's why I love what's going on with Amazon right now. They're willing to throw things literally on the wall to see if they stick. And so this is a wall clock to see if it sticks. And it's a countdown timer that you can physically see on your wall. And it's funny. It's really funny.
I want my Echo unit, when I ask it what the time is, I want it to project holographically the time in midair.
I'd love that. You and me both, man. I can't wait till we get holograms more often. I get limited holograms in some of the stuff I'm working on, but nothing like what we're going to get in the next 10
years. Talking about that, have you seen, what's it called? The one with Hatsune Miku, the holographic assistant?
Oh, yeah, that is amazing.
Glowbox, or what is it called? Something like that.
I know what you're talking about. We're moving that direction. Thing.
So the personal companion in a hologram. So,
I mean, that's the ultimate endpoint of all this, right? You've written about that. That's where this is all heading. That's our computer. It's going to be our companion. And that's complete the circle.
Fantastic. Well, Brian, listen, thanks for the update on all things voice. It's great to have you back on the show. And we'll, when something else comes up, we'll bring you back on.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Brett. Real pleasure being here.
Fantastic. So that was Brian Romley. He is probably the number one voice first expert globally these days. So if you're not already, follow him on Twitter and keep in tune what's happening in the space. Now, up next, we're going to sort of transition into AI in marketing and advertising. AdHive is the world's first, they bill themselves as the world's first AI-controlled influencer marketing program. And they've recently, we have in as of June, Dimitri, why don't you come on, and I'll get you to introduce yourself and the team at AdHive. So give me a bit about your bio and tell us a little bit about AdHive to get some context.
Thank you, Brett. I'm from we're from AI originally, and late 2016, early 2017, we created AdHive as a platform, as a one-stop service for influencer marketing, which is actually fully automated. So that's the that was our dream, to fully automate all these functions, and we almost did it.
Tell me a bit more about the automation element. So what are you automating in the marketing sort of flow? What specifically?
Okay, so just a few words. We just discussed with Brian that technologies change so fast, but people change not so fast, so we still need to know opinions of our peers. We still value recommendations, advices, and we want to automate the recommendations on the lowest level, where peer-to-peer recommendations, where we advise something to our peers, to our friends and neighbors. And we use AI and blockchain for this. You can advertisers right now use influencers and use them and control them manually.
So you're talking about, when you talk about influencers, because this is a term that is bandied around in the space, but you're talking about influencers on platforms like social media platforms. So, for example, we had during the week Kendall Jenner tweeted out something about Snapchat, and the price of Snapchat, the price on the stock market dropped. So she's sort of an Uber influencer. But in the same manner, you've got lots of influencers out there on social media. So they're retweeting about products, or they're putting out, you know, Instagrams or Snapchats about products they support. They're actually paid for by advertisers, and by these influencers promoting these products, then people who follow those influencers will go and buy those products, right? So that's what we talk about as influencer marketing. Am I correct?
Yes, you are correct. Exactly, and you explained the example where you have top influencer, but we work with micro, let's say nano influencers, just people who have account on Instagram, and
so not necessarily big followers, but
absolutely, okay. Absolutely, and these people can influence on their neighbors, but the trust level of trust they have 10 times bigger than top influencers, because people who their followers know them personally, or most of them know them personally. So that's why when such people post something, their neighbors, their peers, their friends react on it much more involvement. And advertisers would love to use influencers with such high level of involvement, but it's difficult to use it, because you need to combine thousands of them to achieve the required level of reach of audience, and that's what we can do with AdHive.
So tell me about the AI You know, what does the AI look like? Where, how did you build it? Actually, you know what? Listen, I want to just jump in here before, because I realize the time. We're getting very close to an ad break. So let's take a quick ad break. And then when we get back, I actually want to dive into how you developed this AI. Is that okay, Dimitri?
Sure.
All right, guys. Okay. So, guys, you're listening to Breaking Banks. I am Brett King. This show is brought to you by Provoke Media. We are the largest global network in the fintech space. You can check out more about Provoke Media at provoke.fm. And, of course, Breaking Banks is one of the shows supported or created by Provoke Media. We'll be right back after this short break with more on artificial intelligence in influencer marketing.
Become our friend on Facebook. Post your thoughts about our shows and network on our timeline. Visit Facebook.com/Voice America.
Now, before we get back to talking about fintech, I want to take a quick moment to tell you about eFinancialCareers.com, one of the supporters of the show. They're the world's leading career site for financial service professionals for over 15 years. eFinancialCareers.com partners with leading financial and fintech firms, so your resume is seen by all the top companies and recruiters in the US and abroad. Now, as we all know, financial services is a very dynamic, ever-changing industry, and eFinancial Careers provides valuable resources from helpful career coaching to interview strategies and tools that keep you up to speed and well-informed with what's happening now in the industry and what it means for your career. Registration's free for financial professionals. Make sure you take advantage of all the resources they have to offer. So check them out, eFinancialCareers.com.
You're listening to Breaking Banks, featuring your host, Brett King. To reach the show today, please call 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or join the conversation on Twitter by using the hashtag Breaking Banks. Now, back to the program.
Hey guys, Brett King. I am back with you on Breaking Banks. We are live, coming to you live from New York today. I want to thank Brian Romley for joining the earlier part of the show. If you missed it, check it out on the replay. Had some really interesting things to say about Amazon Alexa and what's happening with the voice first movement. So getting back to our interview we had earlier, we have on the show Dimitri, and I've got to see if I can pronounce this right, Malyanov. Is that right, Dimitri?
Yeah, is this right? Yeah.
So, Dimitri, you are the co-founder of the business AdHive, which we were talking about earlier. Now, I want to delve into a little bit of the AI technology because you guys also use blockchain, and there's been a lot of discussion about the fact that blockchain and artificial intelligence, are very compatible for the future world that we're moving to. In fact, a lot of the blockchain people will say that the way to make artificial intelligence ubiquitous in the future be through this tech. So explain to us how you married blockchain and artificial intelligence together in this this technology layer that you've built.
Absolutely agree with you. That's two important bricks in this wall of automation. So we use AI for verification, so we can teach system to recognize, to define does the task executed properly or not. So if advertiser create tasks for influencers and influencer executed, we can teach system to recognize, to define does it proper execution or not. By that, we can avoid any manual work on backend, except just a few cases in the whole campaign. So we can reduce dramatically the people involvement in this part, but this part usually is very time-consuming.
When we talk about AI, you know, what you're really talking about here is the branch of AI we call robotic process automation. So you've taken a process that a human would normally do, and you've now built an algorithm to take care of that, right?
Yes, absolutely. Normally this work spend a lot of time, and that's very easy to do things, and that's why we implemented AI here. And we can recognize video, photo, objects on video, on photo, words in speech. So everything that advertisers normally want to use. So they want that people show something or say something or text something. We can recognize it. We can find it, recognize it, and verify does it has a proper execution or not.
Now, you as a co-founder in this space, I'm assuming that you are a technologist, that you have experience in the actual technology around artificial intelligence personally?
Not so much. I had technical background, but in this project, I'm responsible for business development.
Okay, so...
I understand in general how it works, but I don't do it
Okay, myself. But my point what I was going to ask you was, you know, when we start looking at technology like voice recognition, which we've been talking about on the show a lot today, you know, is there now sort of common libraries where they're being developed by, you know, open source communities for natural language processing and things like that? Or is everybody sort of building their own capabilities?
What I know now that most of the projects use their own bases. So we teach, we usually teach system with our own tools. That's the big issue right now, to standardize the metadata, to standardize the formats, using the result of other projects, so to create the one base, one control base.
I get it. Now, just finally, before we finish up the interview with you guys, you do have your own token. It's called ADH. You can see it on Telegram, Cryptos, and other platforms. Can you explain to me, you know, how does your token work in you know, sort of 60 seconds or less? Is it a utility token? You know, how does it link to the activity of the platform?
Yeah, that's pure utility token. Advertisers convert their budget into automatically convert campaign budget into ADH tokens, and we spread it to send it to influencers, to community members, to tech providers. So this is pure utility. Represent the number of for advertiser it represents a number of contacts with audience.
Fantastic. Well, thank you, Dimitri, for joining us on Breaking Banks today. If you want to check out AdHive, you can go to adhive.tv. And Dimitri, what's your Twitter ID so we can follow that?
DMIITT.
Yeah. Okay, great. Fantastic. So we'll keep watching and seeing with interest how your work at AdHive with your artificial intelligence develops. Thanks for joining the show.
Thank you, Barrett. Thank you for inviting me.
No problem. All right. So another entrant into the U.S. market recently has been a friend of ours through currency transfer. This is a overseas currency transfer business. They've recently come back into the U.S. And it is my pleasure to welcome onto the show today Daniel Abrahams, who's the CEO of Currency Transfer, to share with us more about their big news. Daniel.
Hi, Brett. How are you doing? It's a real pleasure to be on.
Yeah. Welcome, first of all, to the U.S., I guess, on behalf of your team. Where is your headquarters located? Where's Currency Transfer based?
So we're an Anglo. It's an interesting backstory. We're an Anglo-Israeli fintech. So yeah. I'm actually dialing in from the very warm climes of Tel Aviv, where pretty much half the team are, and the other half are based in London. So our roots are very much in London, but it's really interesting. I think we've very much married up the best of two pretty incredible ecosystems to effectively build our fintech global payments marketplace. And now, as you quite rightly point out, we've announced some big news last week that the platform is now live and ready to service what I would call mini multinationals. That's really our ideal client profile, your importers, exporters, anyone who's really trading their business in multiple currencies. And as a virtue of our model, we've been able to announce, rather than go state by state, we're live now pretty much in every state in the US.
But now you have to, because the way the US is structured, do you have to get a payments license in every state to be able to operate?
So what's very interesting about our model, as we launched in EMEA and now coming to the US, and we're closing in on close to $1 billion traded on the platform, is that because we don't touch client funds, because we don't send the onward payment, and because we don't convert the currency, I mean, our whole sort of mission has been to build that modern day currency company. We don't actually have to be licensed. So what we've done is we've effectively gone country by country, continent by continent. We've arrived in the US and integrated with local MSBs, built upon their APIs, whether that's, you know,
so an MSB API being a money service business, is that right?
Exactly. So a money service business that like us is either a B2B to B company or B2B to C, you know, they will effectively give us the rails in which we can go out and effectively.
I see. So you're sort of an aggregator of all these different transfer capabilities, and essentially you pick and choose for the customer. If they want to send money from point A to point B, you'll pick and choose the most effective platform to do that for them.
Exactly. We're more of an aggregator of services rather than price. So it isn't a right. price comparison platform. I think the type of client that we go after needs something slightly more sophisticated than simply a cheap euro or a cheap dollar. So we get into all the sort of hedging, currency risk management, et cetera, for companies that pretty much have significant cross-border payment requirements.
So tell me a bit more about what the platform is used for in terms of transfers today. If you're a business or you're an individual, what sort of transfers do people put over the platform?
So typically, I mean, I'm sure you've had currency entrepreneurs on the show before, but I think with respect to why, you know, we've managed to sort of make some waves with our own client profile, of course, you know, the entry point is they're looking for better rates. So that could be an importer buying products from China. It could be an exporter that's repatriating profits back home. And you know, the baseline why,
and he doesn't want to send rice.
Exactly. And why they would come in, the entry point, of course, would be, you know, I'm looking for a better exchange rate than my bank, who really have an eight still. I know we kind of live in this fintech bubble, but, you know, in the outside world, you know, 85 to 90%.
I'm definitely in the fintech bubble.
I'm sure. we take it for granted. You hear, you know, the big names, the TransferWises, the Revolutes, hopefully the currency transfers of this world. But, you know, in the real world, you're still looking 85 to 90% of our addressable market are using a high street bank, a community bank, being charged 2 to 5% of the value their transfer in the hidden fee built into the rate. One third of a global payment runs into some type of problem or issue, whether it's settlement delays or, you know, customer support problems. So we, of course, you know, we're about providing a better, more frictionless cross-border finance experience. But I think, you know, as I alluded to, what really does set us apart, I think, from the competition is being able to provide better tools to manage currency risk. We are living in a bit of a interesting macro climate at the moment, whether it's Donald Trump uncertainty, Brexit uncertainty. And I think, you know, yes, you can go to a platform and you can sell on price, but ultimately, I think you end up losing on price. You can be offered one pip or 1% away from the mid-market, but if the actual interbank rate is moving 4% in a certain period, you know, I think having access as a growing business doing your hundreds of thousands a year abroad or millions a year abroad, you need to, in my opinion, have a platform that can help you digitize that currency risk. So I guess that's the sort of swimming pool that we operate in, whereby we're looking at the slightly more sophisticated business and helping them to effectively go global in a slightly more frictionless manner to the what's typically available to them at the moment.
Okay, well, interesting. So I do have a question. I was looking at your bio on LinkedIn, and I noticed that you used to call a business My Currency Transfer. So when did you guys make the change to drop the My? And was it the Facebook moment in that happened with Sean Parker, where he said to Zuckerberg, just call it Facebook. You don't need the.
Well, I think it's far less glamorous than that. It was more we really spun out of being a digital marketing business, really. I mean, I was an affiliate, professional affiliate, so to speak, selling leads to your Western Unions, Travelexes, and My Currency Transfer was really an out-and-out price comparison website, very limited tech. It was very simply, let's get to the top of Google, dominate the SERPs, that's sort of, you know, the search engine optimization and really, you know, dominate for, you know, terms like send money abroad, and we would basically cut revenue share deals with currency companies around the world. And I think it got to the point where me and my partner were doing very, very well, don't get me wrong, and it was an incredibly profitable business, and the site is still up and running. It does provide information on options for moving money, but I think we made the iteration to becoming a fintech business and becoming a really deep tech platform predicated not just on let's sell leads to the highest bidder, but let's provide real value, transparency, and tools to help you, as I said, in a much more frictionless way, move money around the world. So I guess it was just a bit of an evolution of our business.
All right. So tell me a bit more about the fintech scene in Tel Aviv for those that aren't familiar with it. Because, you know, Tel Aviv, is sort of known in the fintech circles, the Silicon Wadi. Wadi being the Arabic name for like a sand dune, I understand. Why is Tel Aviv becoming a hotbed of fintech innovation?
Yeah, it's an amazing fintech landscape. I actually, when currencytransfer.com first moved over here, I thought, let me try and do some type of community initiative. So I set up a meetup group called Fintech Aviv, which has morphed over 2 to 3 years to now having over 5,000 or so members. And that's kind of sort of also coincided with now, I think you have over 700-800 active fintech companies out of, you know, a total pool of 7,000 active startups for a population of just over 6 million, if my maths are correct. And so, you know, I think the fintech landscape, you know, in terms of the wider tech ecosystem here, it's, you know, this is a country that has more startups per capita than anywhere in the world. I think there are a lot of reasons why. It's very much an emigrant nation. So, you know, if you kind of start from scratch, that makes you to some degree a risk taker. The army, the battleground experience, I think, comes into startup life, the sort of win at all costs, improvise, break shit, if I may say so, mentality. It's an amazing
place. We're on
place.
The AM band in New York, so.
Apologize for that. If we delve into fintech as well, you've got over 100 insurtech companies, 100 blockchain companies. It's a very really sort of, it's an amazing ecosystem, and it's a real privilege to be part of it.
And your team, that's fine, your team in London, tell us about the team. How big is the team?
So we're very much a bootstrap business. As I said, we're closing in on $1 billion traded on the platform. We launched in 2015. That's when we really started to get going. And so we're coming up to 20 full-time members of staff. We've only ever raised over $500,000, close to profitability. So it's been a very,
but it just shows. It just shows how small a team you can have to do $1 billion of money transfers. It's no small feat. So just shows you what technology is doing in the space, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we've had to be very resourceful, and it's been very stressful along the way.
Welcome to startup life as an entrepreneur, my
absolutely.
Friend.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I could tell you some stories.
we do constantly have the battle now, particularly, I think, because we feel we've built something so unique and, you know, there clearly is a huge addressable market. We are having those boardroom conversations as to whether we now look at institutional money. But, you know, in terms of the journey, I think I wouldn't have changed it for anything.
Yeah, no, I think that's a story that many of us would tell. So where do you want to take this thing? Where do you think it's going?
So I'm very, very proud that we now are able to service clients in four continents. So for a small bootstrap company to be able to say that is something that we're very proud of. I think now it's very much about the client acquisition piece. You know, I think we have thrown a lot of paint at the wall over the last 3 years. We've looked at what sticked. We have onboarded many, many different types of clients. And I think now it's around the real focus. You know, we know where we want to go with respect to the types of clients we want to build products for. And I think particularly if we're going to carry on down this sort of, you know, bootstrap cash flow profit over growth at all costs mentality, I think it's devising, you know, a very simplistic strategy, but one that can obviously run very, very fast. And I think, you know, I think if there's one buzzword, it would be focus, because we have a lot of capabilities on the platform. We cover a lot of currencies, a lot of geographies, but the challenge of any two-sided marketplace, we now have to bring the boys to the yard, I think, as they say.
Okay, so now there's been a lot of talk recently about using technologies like blockchain for overseas transfers and so forth. How do you think that technology is changing the overall marketplace?
So I think absolutely for the good. If you look at the RippleNet network, we're indirectly involved there. One of our payment partners on the marketplace, RationalFX, another very, you know, strong success story of a bootstrap business doing, I think, £8 billion since inception. They are integrated to Ripple. We're integrated with RationalFX. And so, you know, as a byproduct of that, we can move towards, you know, real-time business payments and far more frictionless flexibility around, you know, how business payments are routed. So I think, you know, the lovely position that we're in is we're not an old-fashioned, old-school broker. We're not tied to, you know, the constraints of one, you know, set of regulations. You know, we are that open, democratic marketplace that can sort of move with the wind. And so we, you know, we're constantly looking at ways that we can, again, back to the boring, you know, point that I keep coming back to, frictionless finance. You know, if there are these strong advancements around blockchain, you know, potentially making SWIFT redundant, again, we're not married to any one particular rails. We're very much fixated.
But it is pretty clear that the expectation will be, whether it's next year or within the next 5 years, but the expectation will be for real-time payments, not just at a local level, like within your community or within your country, but, you know, I can send you an email or a text message in real time anywhere in the world today. Why can't I send you money? And so that's inevitably where we're moving to, right?
Would you say that would be the case irrespective of size, whether it's a £1 transfer or a £1 million transfer?
I think so, but I think there may be controls around that depending on things like letters of credit and so forth. But I think there's no reason why you should have a built-in delay. You should have built-in controls, but a delay is unnecessary. Once you commit to the payment, right, it should happen. So
I agree. I think if I look at the way my industry has evolved, you know, it started out 100% very, you know, SWIFT driven. when we move from banks to the concept of a non-bank.
Right, so SWIFT being the bank-to-bank payment network that's out
there.
Hey, but Daniel, I'm going to have to jump in here because we are wrapping up. We are running out of time. But where can people check out more about currency transfer?
So, yeah, you can go to the domain. I guess it does exactly what it says on the tin. So currencytransfer.com. And thank you very much, Brett. It's been a real pleasure to be on the show.
Thanks for coming on the show and giving us an update. So that was Daniel Abrahams from currencytransfer.com. So thanks for joining the show this week. I will be back next week. Of course, we'll be doing our show from Finovate next week. But before that, we're going to have Shamir Karkal on. You might remember Shamir from Bank Simple. He's going to be talking about his new venture that he's kicking off here. So that'll be great to get that on the news. But thanks for joining us this week. Don't also forget, I forgot to mention at the top of the hour, but don't forget the FinTech Talents Festival coming to London on the 30th and 31st of October in East London. You can go to fintechtalents.com to check that out. And don't forget, if you're listening to Breaking Banks, you like the show, give us a review on iTunes or wherever it is that you're listening on the platform. Tweet us out. Tell us about what you like about the show, what guests you'd like to see on the show. This is how we craft our future shows coming out. So, and you can always use hashtag Breaking Banks or at Breaking Banks One to converse with us on Twitter as well. That's it for the show this week. Thank you for joining us on Breaking Banks. I'm your host, Brett King, and I will see you guys next week back on the show on the air in New York City. Bye.
You've been listening to Breaking Banks with host Brett King. Please be sure to join us again next Thursday at noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern Time for more of the latest in fintech news.